Europe reins in high-frequency trading.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California and is supported by Citrix with GoToMeeting, connecting people in face-to-face online meetings so they can collaborate from anywhere. More at GoToMeeting.com.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, in for David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. The European Union has just passed some of the toughest rules in the world governing high-frequency trading. That's trading done using computer algorithms, which buy and sell massive amounts of stock in microseconds. The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker joins us now from London. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Stacey.
So, Andrew, tell us what some of these rules governing high-frequency trading will do.
Basically, quite substantial new regulation. High-frequency traders would have to have circuit breakers or some sort of system to stop trades if the volatility becomes excessive. Algorithms will have to be tested and even authorized by regulators. They'll have to keep records of their orders. And there'd also be a minimum size of price increments, which would have the effect of reducing the opportunities, if you like, for driving those price increments down, which is something that high-frequency traders are especially effective in exploiting.
Now, these are some of the toughest high-frequency trading regulations in the world. How are these reforms being received?
In a very mixed way, I have to say. There's some people in particular, I've seen some very strong criticism of that particular issue about minimum price increments. The idea of getting price increments down does have the potential, it is argued, to reduce the cost of trading for the ultimate investors in the stock market. The arguments in favour of tougher regulation are the idea that high-frequency trading can cause excessive volatility for no great social gain. So views are very much mixed.
Andrew Walker is the economics correspondent for the BBC in London. Andrew, thank you.
My pleasure.
The markets are singing a happy tune this Wednesday. London's FTSE is up 0.33%. Germany's DAX is up 0.8%. U.S. markets gained ground yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average added 0.5% to close at 16,262. If you're in Midtown Manhattan today and look way, way up, you'll see a Mustang on the observation deck of the Empire State Building. A triple yellow 2015 Mustang, to be exact. It's Ford's way of celebrating the 50th anniversary of the car. Sally Herships has the story.
When the Mustang first came out in 1964, it was a big hit.
People driving around the first Mustangs were being hunted down basically on boulevards, being asked to pull over so they could take a look at the car. And
Mark Takahashi is an editor with automotive website Edmunds.com. He says the first Mustang sold for around $2,300.
They expected to sell, I think, 100,000 Mustangs in the first year, and they ended up selling 100,000 the first 3 months.
David Whiston is an equity analyst with Morningstar. He says the Mustang was built on the platform of another car, the Falcon, which saved a lot on development, engineering, and design costs.
It was sporty. It was cool. It was something you wanted to drive or take to the beach. But it was also, and the key thing, I think, for why it's still around is that it was affordable.
Whitson says a lot of automakers today are interested in building multiple models on the same platform. Luckily, he says, they won't have to recreate the wheel. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing solutions to help grow and protect retirement income through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. By CIT. For over 100 years, CIT has provided lending, leasing, and advisory services to small and middle market businesses. More at CIT.com. And by Emerald Data Solutions, makers of board docs and supporters of the NSBA Initiative for Excellence in Public Education. StandUpForPublicSchools.org.
The Arab state of Oman has oil. But unlike its neighbor Saudi Arabia, its supply is limited. So Oman has been trying to diversify its economy, bolstering small businesses and encouraging locals to work in the private sector. The results have been mixed, as Elisa Roth reports.
This is Selma's Chocolates. It's a tiny cafe and store in the lobby of the Bank of Oman, and it's the kind of small business that a lot of people here think is the future of Oman's economy. What sets it apart from its competition are the local flavors.
We have old sweets which started to vanish.
Aisha Al-Hajri is one of the owners.
So we chose to take the old generation sweets like the halwa, and like the caramelized sesame. And there's a kind of sweet called maho. Maho, it's like a toffee.
Source them from local producers and fill chocolates with them. What's not local are the employees, because the company can't afford it. She and Salma, that's her co-owner and the shop's namesake, are Omani.
The rest are foreigners. For a small business in Oman, it's difficult for us to hire an Omani due to the minimum wages.
Instead, she has foreign workers from the Philippines, India, and Indonesia, for whom there's no minimum wage. Around 15% of Omanis are unemployed, and a lot of them would rather have government jobs, which have shorter hours and other perks. The government's been raising the minimum wage for Omanis to get more locals to work in the private sector. David Mednikoff, who's the director of Middle Eastern Studies at UMass Amherst, says changing those attitudes will be hard.
The new expectations that they're going to be shaping, that, you know, if you're young and you're looking for a job, you can't count on the public sector anymore. This is a big shift.
Other countries in the Persian Gulf, like Qatar and the United Arab Emirates, also want more locals in the private sector. And Mednikoff thinks Oman is more likely to succeed partly because its native population is bigger. But Aisha Al-Hajri isn't sure about that. She recently offered her young cousin a job, and the woman turned it down, saying a private sector job just wasn't stable enough. In Muscat, Oman, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
And finally, attention, New York coffee drinkers. A new app will let you drink all you want for $45 a month. Cups cut an all-you-can-drink deal with dozens of New York coffee shops. Of course, the $45 a month is just for drip. If you're an espresso enthusiast, you'll have to pay about $85 a month. That's what you'd pay for about 22 cups of coffee. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The richer countries get, the more they want, well, they want what everybody else has.
They're becoming more like the Europeans, or, God forbid, like the American diet.
I'm Kai Rizdal. So many people, not enough food. That story, the rest of the day's business news, and the numbers from Wall Street next time on Marketplace from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.